The heart of perfect understanding.
The glory is above Avalokita, one moving in the deep course of perfect understanding, shed light on the five scandals, and found them equally empty. After this penetration, he overcame ill being. Listen, Shariputra, form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Form is not other than emptiness, emptiness is not other than form. The same is true with feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Listen, Shariputra, all dharmas are marked with emptiness. They are neither produced nor destroyed, neither defiled nor immaculate, neither increasing nor decreasing. Therefore, in emptiness there is neither form, nor feelings, nor perceptions, nor mental formations, nor consciousness. No eye, or ear, or nose, or tongue, or body, or mind. No form, no sound, no smell, no taste, no touch, no object of mind. No realms of elements from eyes to mind consciousness. No interdependent origins and no extinction of them. From ignorance to death and decay. No ill being, no cause of ill being. No end of your being and no path, no understanding and no attainment. Because there is no attainment, the Bodhisattvas, grounded in perfect understanding, find no obstacles for their minds. Having no obstacles, they overcome fear, liberating themselves forever from illusion, realizing perfect nirvana. All Buddhas in the past, present, and future, thanks to this perfect understanding, arrive at full and bright universal enlightenment. Therefore one should know that perfect understanding is the highest mantra, the unequal mantra, the destroyer of your being, the incorruptible truth. A mantra of Prajnaparamita should therefore be proclaimed. Gate, gate, para, gate, para, sangate. Bodhisattva gate, gate, para, gate, gate, para, sangate. Bodhisattva gate, gate, para,
Good morning, dear Sangha. And Happy New Year. I forgot all my French. I think it's been about 5 months since Thay last gave a Dharma talk in French. Lately, I've been speaking nothing but Vietnamese in the Dharma talk. Today is January 2nd in the year 2011. We are in the Upper Hamlet during the winter retreat. You know, of course, that there is a plum village in Thailand, a Thai plum village. There are hundreds of monastics and hundreds of lay practitioners there listening, sitting and listening to us. It's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon over there in Thailand. When we were in Pak Chong, Pak Chong is the place in Thailand where the Plum Village is. Many journalists came to talk to me. There were about 30 journalists in Thailand who came. They came to walk with us, to sit with us, to listen to the Dharma with us. And at the end, we had a special session for the journalists. The political situation in Thailand had been very turbulent. So that day, I was only with these journalists, and we sat together for quite a long time. And I invited them to ask their questions. They asked about 40 or 50 questions, and only after that, I gave my answers. So all the questions first and then one answer. I tried to answer all the questions with one response. And I think everyone was satisfied. At the end, one journalist said to me, "Thay, the new year, the Thai New Year will come. Can you give us something to practice for the new year? Can you suggest something we can practice to help with this turbulent situation? Very difficult time for the Thai nation." I thought about that question. I reflected for some minutes, and then I offered my suggestion. Listen to each other. Let us listen to each other. That is the practice that you can apply in this situation, because men and women wearing the red shirts. Some are wearing the red shirts, others are wearing the green shirts. We should listen to each other because there is suffering in each one of us. And we don't recognize the suffering of the other. We suffer and we think the person who's suffering is just our side, ourself. We don't think the other side is suffering too. We don't see that. That's why we need to take the time, make the time to listen to each other, and deep listening is what I offered them as a practice. So our friends in Thailand can practice this, listening to each other. In Buddhism, to be able to listen to the other person, first you have to know how to listen to yourself. There is suffering in us, and we don't have the time to listen to and to understand that deep suffering that is inside us. In fact, we do everything we can to run away from our suffering. We don't want to come back to ourselves, to listen deeply to that suffering that's inside. And instead, we use consumption to try to forget that suffering that's dwelling in there. And in the supermarket, we are offered many, many things that are supposed to help us forget our suffering. There are thoughts, speech, and action that make us suffer and that make others suffer. According to the teaching of the Buddha, we have to come back to ourselves. We have to listen to ourselves. We're afraid that if we come back to ourselves, we will have to face that suffering in us, and we're afraid of being completely overwhelmed by it. That's why the Buddha prescribed this practice, to help us know how to come back to ourselves with mindfulness. If we train in walking meditation, if we train ourselves with mindful breathing, we will be able to generate this energy that strengthens us and empowers us. Each time we take a breath with mindfulness, that energy of mindfulness is increased, is cultivated. Every time we make one step with mindfulness, that energy of mindfulness is being generated and developed. We become strong enough to come back to ourselves and really get in touch with the suffering inside and to listen deeply to that suffering. The first noble truth of Buddhism is that there is suffering in us and in the world. But to be able to understand the suffering in the world, in the other person, we have to be able to understand the suffering in ourselves. So one in-breath in mindfulness helps you to come back to yourself, to be able to gently, tenderly embrace with a lot of compassion that suffering that lies inside. Hello, my suffering, I'm here for you. I'm embracing you. We shouldn't fight with our suffering. That's violence. In this practice, there is no violence in meditation. We use the energy of mindfulness to recognize that suffering inside. Hello, my suffering. Bonjour, tristesse. was an old song in French. Hello, my despair. We say hello to our own suffering, and with the arms of the energy of mindfulness, we tenderly embrace the suffering. And this is what the Buddha encouraged us to do, to embrace tenderly, very compassionately, the suffering that's inside of us. 1 hour of practice already helps. 2 hours of practice, a day of practice, that helps to solidify that energy of mindfulness. And if we have a Sangha to practice with, we can very, very well benefit from the collective energy generated by the Sangha, because a Sangha is a community of practice, and every member of the community of practice, every member of the community is practicing mindful breathing, mindful walking, to generate a powerful energy of mindfulness. Collective energy. The group energy can help us a lot. We should entrust ourselves to the Sangha. We should know how to benefit from the group energy that the Sangha generates. We can sit with the Sangha and say, "Dear Sangha, I'm here. Here I am with my pain, with my despair. Here is my despair, here's my pain. I need the Sangha to help me embrace this suffering inside of me." We allow ourselves to be carried by the Sangha. We pour ourselves into the Sangha. We let ourselves be embraced by the Sangha. We want to practice like a drop of water in the whole river. We want to let the river embrace us, carry us, and transform us. In Buddhism, we talk about the practice of taking refuge in the Sangha. Sangham Sharanam Gacchami. That's because the Sangha is powerful. The Sangha can embrace us and transform us. When you are there sitting with the Sangha, you can allow the Sangha to embrace and to cradle your pain. Everyone is there for you, silently breathing. We produce this energy of mindfulness to be able to support you, to listen to you, to help you embrace that block of suffering inside of you. When you walk with the Sangha, you don't walk just as one individual. You walk as a cell in the Sangha body. It's much easier when you can allow yourself to be carried by the Sangha. In Buddhism, we see very clearly that listening to our own suffering is a necessary practice . We get in touch with the suffering that's there. Like a lotus flower is born from the mud, there is a direct and deep connection between the mud and the lotus flower. If there is no mud, there is no lotus. In Buddhism, we understand that this is interbeing. If there's no suffering, there's no peace or happiness. So we want to practice in such a way that the mud helps us to create, to produce, to give rise to happiness and joy. So we learn how to recognize the suffering in us, learn how to cradle, to embrace that suffering, and to listen deeply to that suffering as a basic practice. To do that, you do it alone, and you do it with the support of the Sangha. With the Sangha, it's easier. We don't want to fight against our suffering. We only want to try to understand. To understand, we have to listen, we have to embrace, we have to be there. The suffering may be something that was transmitted to us by our parents or our ancestors. Sometimes we have a suffering inside that we don't understand. You want to cry, and you can't even figure out what is the reason, the source of this suffering. What are the roots of it? It may be that this suffering was transmitted to us by our ancestors. So we say to ourselves, dear ancestors, this is a suffering that you have transmitted to me. Now, I have the opportunity to encounter the Dharma and the practice. I will practice to understand this suffering. You didn't have the opportunity to do this. I'm going to listen to this suffering for you. And I'm going to get deeply in touch with this suffering. I do it for you. And I'm going to transform it for all of you. It is with love that we do this. We practice listening deeply to our own suffering. There are those among us who can understand the suffering of our grandfather, our grandmother, our father, our mother. There may have been war, misery, and conflict. These things can be found all over the world. The First World War, the Second World War, etc. Our ancestors suffered, and that suffering may have been transmitted to us. So, we have to tell ourselves that the suffering may have arisen since my birth, but there's also this collective suffering of the ancestors that may have been transmitted to me. And we have to accept that. We have to accept our ancestors and their suffering. Because we are not an independent, separate self, separate from our ancestors. When we look deeply into ourselves, we see that our ancestors are very much there, present in every cell of our body. Every cell of our body contains all the generations of ancestors through our genes. In Buddhism, they don't speak in terms of genes, they speak in terms of seeds in the store consciousness. Physical, mental, spiritual seeds sown by our ancestors and transmitted. Those seeds are there in every cell of our body. So we can look deeply into our body and say, dear ancestors, I know you're there. And that I am your continuation. I am a river. And I carry all my ancestors in me. When I walk, all my ancestors walk with me. That's the reality, that's the truth. When you make one step that way, all your ancestors are taking that step with you. And when you breathe in, all your ancestors breathe in with you. This is the insight of non-self. You are not a separate self. We are all a stream, a river. And we carry within us all our ancestors. So their joy, their pain, and their suffering, if we are to accept our ancestors, we also have to accept these things from them. Dear ancestors, I know that this suffering came to me from you. I accept it. And I will look deeply into the nature of that suffering in order to understand it. And I do it for all of you. With this Sangha supporting me, I will be able to listen deeply. And some hours of this kind of listening will make a big difference. If you feel you need to cry, you can do that. Those tears can help to heal you and your ancestors. Understanding the suffering will bring compassion. In Buddhism, we speak of love and compassion as something that is born from understanding. If we understand, we can accept, we can love. To love someone is to understand that person. If you don't understand the suffering of someone, you can never truly love that person. So for Buddhism, love is understanding. It is understanding that gives rise to compassion. So embracing tenderly that suffering, we can begin to understand it. And that understanding will give rise to compassion. And compassion is something that heals. Compassion is a kind of nectar that can bring life back, bring back hope. And that's why when we can embrace and listen to that suffering in us, compassion is born. At the same time as the understanding, and with that compassion, we will receive a lot of relief, a big relief. we suffer less. Because we know just by embracing our suffering, we suffer less. And when we suffer less, then we can look at the other person and see right away that that person is suffering. That person doesn't know how to get in touch with his or her own suffering. She's suffering. She's the victim of her suffering. And she makes others suffer, including us. So, when we have compassion in us, we suffer much less, we feel much lighter, and we can look at the other person. And when we look at the other person, we do that with the eyes of compassion. The eyes of compassion is an expression from the Lotus Sutra. We aspire to look at all beings with the eyes of compassion. We all have these eyes. When understanding is born in us, the eyes of compassion are also born. When we look at the other person, we can use our eyes of compassion. We see the other person is suffering, and he is the victim of his own suffering. And he doesn't know how to deal with that suffering inside. That's why he suffers and he makes other people suffer. When we see that, we don't feel angry anymore. We don't want to blame because we know how to look with the eyes of compassion. The Buddha is someone who knows how to look at beings with the eyes of compassion. If we practice the Dharma, we can do the same. We can look at others with the eyes of compassion. We don't suffer anymore. And the other person who sees us looking at them with these eyes of compassion, that person can recognize that compassion and understanding right away. In your eyes, there's no hatred or reproach because you already have the understanding and the compassion. Looking at beings with the eyes of compassion, you can recognize that suffering in the other person, in him or in her. And you can understand that suffering very quickly because you have already understood your own suffering. That's why you can understand the suffering of the other person. More quickly, more easily. Because our suffering reflects, carries in it the suffering of the other. The suffering in us carries within it the suffering of the world, of the planet. That's why if we want to heal the planet, we must first heal ourselves. If humans are not healed, the planet will not be healed. So understanding one's own suffering is the basis of the practice. We need to take some time to sit and come back to ourselves. Listen deeply and tenderly embrace that suffering, which is the reflection of the suffering of the world. And once that suffering is understood, then we understand very quickly the suffering of the other person. So this peace, this compassion, this happiness in us is born It's a lotus flower born from the mud of suffering. There is a very deep link between the mud and the lotus, and there is a very strong connection between suffering in oneself and suffering in the world, as well as peace and compassion. With compassion and peace, happiness will be possible. So for the new year, our practice this year is listen. Listen to the suffering inside. And then we can begin to listen to the other person. We can listen to each other. Listen with compassion. If the peace talks, have not been very successful, it's because the negotiators probably don't know how to really listen. They don't really listen to each other. They argue, they discuss or dispute, but they don't come to listen. You are an ambassador for your country. You are the ambassador of your ancestral lineage. You are the ambassador of your ancestors, of your parents. So you represent that suffering. You need to let others know about that. In Plum Village, we have organized special retreats for our friends coming from, for our Israeli and Palestinian friends. And both groups are always taught about deep listening. We take the time to express ourselves. We have the time to get in touch with our suffering and to share our experience, to express that suffering. With the practice of loving speech, we can express everything about our suffering, the suffering of our ancestors, the suffering of adults and that of the children, to facilitate the listening process. We want to use gentle words, loving speech. We don't blame or accuse. We only express the truth of our own suffering, the suffering on our side, of our ancestors, and this can be done. To speak the truth of your own suffering with compassionate, loving speech. And the other side is there to listen. They know very well that they will have their own opportunity to do the same. But first, at this first part, it's the time for that side to listen. And when we listen to that suffering in that way, we touch the suffering inside us. We will realize that the suffering of our side, the listening side, is no different from the suffering expressed from the other side that's speaking. And when we do this, we can see that the other side is made up of human beings who have suffered exactly like we have. We recognize the others as living beings who have suffered, who have had also despair just like us, a lot of suffering. When we see the other side as humans, living beings who have suffered, compassion is born in us and we suffer much less right away. When we listen in this way, we can recognize the suffering in the other person and compassion is born. We suffer less right away. And we can begin to look at the other person with those eyes of compassion. This is something that happens here in Plum Village. We have seen this in the encounters here between Israelis and Palestinians. We listen to ourselves and we listen to the other person. In the beginning, there may be suspicion, doubt, anger. But with this practice, thanks to our recognition of the suffering in ourself and the other person, those painful energies start to go down. We have had the good fortune to see those Israelis and Palestinians take each other's hand for walking meditation. There's brotherhood, sisterhood, there's peace, thanks to being able to listen to the suffering inside them and to the other person. I once recommended that in peace talks, they should allow the ambassadors and the negotiators some time first to practice relaxation, a walk, walking meditation, a session of deep relaxation, and we monastics and our lay Dharma teachers are ready to come and help. We will organize a session of deep relaxation, a walking meditation, and to facilitate sessions of deep listening. I suggested this to UNESCO. I suggested that UNESCO organize an institute of peace with people who know how to do these kinds of things, how to guide a session of deep relaxation. Every time there would be peace talks, we could start out with some days of practice like that so that everyone can calm down. And touch deeply their suffering to be able to understand themselves. If you are a parent, if you are a teacher, you can recognize the suffering of the young people. Our young people are suffering a lot already, even before they're grown. The teachers are suffering too. So in school, we can do something. I think it's perfectly normal for a teacher to talk about their suffering and let the students hear. As a teacher, I'm suffering. Can you hear me? Can you listen to me? And a teacher can then talk about his or her own suffering. After having heard the suffering of the teacher, the students will be able to understand better. And the teachers can practice together, train themselves in listening deeply to the suffering of others within themselves first, and when they understand their own suffering, they suffer less. And then they will be able to really understand, listen to and understand the suffering of their students. In the school, we transmit knowledge. And the role of the teacher is to transmit knowledge. But this practice is also a basic, necessary kind of knowledge, listening to suffering. Listening to and understanding the suffering inside and of the other person, these are things that should be learned. The child may begin to understand the suffering of the teacher. The child can learn to practice deep listening to understand the suffering of his mom and his dad, because there is suffering in the dad and in the mom. The young people who have come to our practice centers have made the effort to practice mindful breathing and mindful walking. And when they go back to their families, they have been able to bring this into the family life. And with mindful breathing, we can prevent a fight from taking place. There are young people who have learned how to do this. If dad is about to start a fight, the child can start breathing, and then the child can help. So that quarrel doesn't break out. There are parents who have experienced the success of this practice. They came to Plum Village with their children, to our other practice centers, and they began practicing. So deep listening is something that we can practice right in our own family, our own school, our society. Let's listen to each other. That's the slogan for the new year. We know that to be able to listen to the other person, we have to know how to listen to ourselves. Let's be there for each other. That's the second part of the slogan. We know that this is the practice of mindfulness. This is applied Buddhism. Being there is a basic practice because we have the habit of losing ourselves in the events of daily life. Our mind wanders to the past or to the future. We're not really there for the ones we love. And that's why with the practice of walking meditation, every step brings us back to the present moment. The other day we talked about taking refuge. We take refuge in our breath. We take refuge in the in-breath. It may last 2 or 3 or 4 or more seconds. When we breathe in mindfully, that in-breath becomes a refuge. And in that in-breath, there is solidity, peace, the Buddha, everything. Because mindfulness is generated during that in-breath. Mindfulness is only established in the present moment. It establishes us in the present moment. Mindfulness is the energy that helps us to be there, mind and body together. It only takes 1 or 2, 3 seconds to bring the mind back to the body and be firmly established in the present moment. This is something that anyone can do. Every time I make a step, I do it in mindfulness. This step brings me back to my true home in the here and the now. I know that if the energy of mindfulness is strong, I can get in touch with my ancestors, my blood ancestors, my spiritual ancestors. I get in touch with the Buddha when I walk this way. All my ancestors walk with me. This is an insight that can come right away. In Buddhism, we say there are three energies, mindfulness, concentration, and insight. These three words are written in Sanskrit on the stained glass window of this meditation hall. Don't think that it takes lots of time to get to an insight. It can come right away. With mindfulness, with concentration, you can very well see that all your ancestors are taking that step with you. It's wonderful, and it's possible. This is doable. So when you make a step mindfully, you get in touch with all your ancestors, both the blood and spiritual ancestors. You're in touch with the Buddha and the Sangha. You're in touch with God and the kingdom of God. Everything is there, and you can continue because the out-breath is just the continuation of that in-breath. And after that out-breath, there will be another in-breath, and you are in the kingdom of God. You are deeply in touch with the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. You're in touch with the Pure Land of the Buddha. When you cook for your family, for your Sangha, every movement that you make can be done in mindfulness. It can be done in mindfulness. You dwell only in the present moment. You're always established in that present moment. You're there for yourself to get in touch with the wonders of life that can nourish and heal you and to handle the suffering inside you. And to transform that suffering. And if you know how to be there for yourself, then you're also there for us. So let's be there for each other. First of all, you have to be there for yourself. And when you're there, you can offer that presence to others as well. Mindfulness is an energy that allows us to be there. That's a very simple definition of mindfulness. Mindfulness is the energy that allows us to be there, body and mind united and perfectly present. When you're really there, you can get in touch with all the wonders of life. And you don't need to look anywhere else. Everything is right there in the present moment. The kingdom of God, the Buddha is here. Your happiness, your suffering are there. Mindfulness, concentration, and insight help us to nourish and heal ourselves and to handle the suffering, transform the suffering into peace, into joy and happiness. We need that suffering, just as we need the mud in order to make the lotus flowers. But there's already enough suffering around. We don't need to go and create more. There's enough for us to work with already. So we just need to learn how to make use of the suffering that's already there. That's why in Buddhism we speak about interbeing, interbeing. It's not possible for us to be by ourselves without the mud. The lotus cannot be. The mud and the lotus have to interbe. And it's exactly the same with suffering and happiness. Happiness cannot be by itself. Happiness has to interbe with suffering. With this way of thinking, if we have a dualistic way of thinking, we think we can suppress suffering in order to be happy. And we can just have happiness and completely suppress, remove all the suffering. I want the lotuses, but I don't want any mud. This is quite naive. We need to train ourselves to look deeply. With the eyes of discrimination, we see that we are different from our father. I'm one person, my father is one person. When we look deeply, we see the father is in the son, and the son is in the father. The son is only a continuation of the father. We cannot remove the father from the son. This is a reality. On New Year's Day, we spoke of our true home. I was talking about how in Vietnam the husbands speak of their spouse, their wife, as my home. It's a metaphor they use to describe their spouse. They call them nhà tôi, my house, my home. My home. And the husband calls to his wife. He says, "My home, where are you?" "I'm here in the kitchen." And someone may come to the house and say, "Where is the lady of the house?" And he may say, "My home is at the post office." In Japan, it's also like this. The husbands call their wives. My house. But the wives call their husbands my donor. who gives. In Buddhism, we have the perfection of dana, the generosity. And people offer, make offerings to the Sangha. That's called dana, offering. And in Japan, and in Vietnam and China, the man is the head of the family. He's the one who makes offerings to the family. And he also makes the offerings to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So someone may say, who decorated the house? And he may say, it's my house that decorated the house. The other term that they sometimes use is min. It's like oneself. It's like saying myself, calling out myself to your partner. You call your spouse, you call them self. Myself, me. Because you are married to the other person, you consider the other person as yourself. You are one person, your own self. In Plum Village, we have the practice of second body. When the monk or a nun goes to the post office, they're supposed to have another person with them. They don't have the right to go alone. These are the fine manners, the mindful manners of the monastics. The other person is called the second body. You have not just one body, but a second body, two bodies. Min is your own body, yourself, and they call their wife myself. Min, myself. Min is a self. In a very close relationship, like between father and son, or husband and wife, what happens to me happens to you. My suffering is your suffering. My pain is your pain. There's no more discrimination. So what I do as a practice like one in-breath or out-breath in mindfulness, a step taken in mindfulness, it's for me, but it's for you at the same time. Because if I manage to calm myself, you also benefit from that. I practice for you, I breathe for you, I walk for you, for the whole world. Look at the Father outside. Ah, pine tree. The pine tree is out there breathing and growing, and it's not there only for itself, it's there for all of us. If that tree cannot grow, if it cannot be a pine tree, then we will all be in trouble. That pine tree is there for all of us. The tree has to be a real tree. It has to be green. It has to be vigorous for all of us. So everything inter is. What happens to me happens to everyone else. My suffering is your suffering. My happiness is your happiness. So that is the teaching on interbeing. So we have to be there for ourselves, but also for the other person at the same time. And in the practice, we know that mindfulness is the energy that allows us to be there. When we're there, we can get deeply in touch, we can live deeply every moment of our daily life. And doing that, we can also benefit the others. If you see a person walking mindfully, breathing mindfully, if you see a person who knows how to relax, if there's a person who knows how to smile, that person can contribute peace, solidity, and joy to the world. And who is that person? That person is you. That is the message of Mahayana Buddhism. Who is that person? That person is yourself. You have to be there. You have to be a bodhisattva. We have to breathe in such a way that peace and joy become possible for all of us. We have to walk in such a way that joy and peace are possible. We have to eat, we consume in such a way that joy and peace are possible. That's why living in mindfulness is the solution. On the occasion of the new year, we have the opportunity to rearrange our life a little bit, or a lot, so that the next year can be a better year. This is possible with the practices recommended by the Buddha. Here's what I say to everyone. The time that is given to us is so precious. We shouldn't waste it. Every in-breath, every step you'd make, every word you say should become something healing, nourishing. This is possible. To generate a moment of joy, a moment of peace, to produce a moment of happiness with the capacity of understanding suffering, we can generate compassion, and with that compassion, with that mindfulness, we can very well offer joy, peace, friendship, brotherhood and sisterhood. So the Dharma is that, the applied Dharma. Applied in daily life, we have to live every moment of our daily life in such a way that the suffering can be understood and peace and happiness can be produced. And in Plum Village, we learn how to do these things. These are very simple, doable things. And we do all of these things as a Sangha, a community. Happy New Year once again. Please keep your earphones plugged in for the announcements after the Dharma talk. Don't unplug your earphones. Thank you.